Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
You know what my problem is with religion? Men. Like everything that has the potential to be good, man has always found a way to make it look bad. Those are not the exact words, but one of my favorite quotes from the TV show called The Blacklist. And those are the words of Raymond Reddington, a character played by James Spader. Now, that's actually my problem with planet Earth, not technology. Take AI, for example. There's nothing wrong with AI. There's everything wrong with who's running it. And, global peace as it is one of those, actually, has global peace actually been one of those things that's, I think, you know, it's either 2002 or 2006, Chris Hedges, an American journalist, wrote an article about, pointing out that from his, from the information that he gathered for the past 3,000 years of recorded history, mankind have only been at peace for about 200 of those years. 3,000. A very small portion of it. So basically when it comes to, to the biggest threat to mankind, don't look any further. Don't look at any further than human beings. We are the biggest threat to us.
I almost thought you said human beings.
Human beings.
Look, we're not starting any gender wars, please, guys.
That just means human beings. Mankind's biggest threat.
It's not women.
It's not women.
It's us.
It's not snakes or green mamba and all those, not all those, very venomous, everything that God decided, you know, the perfect place for all this is Australia.
Why are you bringing Australia?
Australia is cursed.
Yeah.
It's like evolution of God ran out of, had all these venomous or very, aggressive living organisms. Like, where do I put this? Right, Australia, fasten your seatbelt. It's either tiny and very venomous, or it's huge and scary and aggressive. Now, for those of you that just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and as always, we're here with yet another exciting topic. The one for today, it's Friday, with some perfect weather that we are blessed with here in the capital, today's segment of Home Run is somewhat of a, we laid the foundation yesterday. The one for today is going to be more localized, as in we're going to be talking more from an African perspective.
Mm.
Yeah, if things turns into what I like to describe as a worst case scenario in terms of the current state of geopolitical events, the way that they are unfolding. If it gets worse to the point of escalating into what you describe as World War III, what impact is that going to have on Africa? What plan do we have? Not to participate as in fighting, that's not what I'm here to ask. I don't have the upper body strength to fight anyone in physical confrontation, let alone in an armed conflict. But, as a continent, Africa, what would be our plan, like economic, political, military? Do we have any plan in mind? Because last time I checked militarily, have you seen Djibouti? Djibouti is a military base with a capital city.
Why, Helmut? Why are we throwing shade to poor Djibouti?
Isn't that where our chair of African Union is from? The current. I think that's where he's from.
That's also true.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's because I think, look, I always wanted to understand, like, why Djibouti is so, you know, is so flooded with foreign military bases. And then I think it has something to do with its strategic location.
And secondly, also primarily because it's pretty close to Somalia. Because of Somalia, you've got most the, what's those guys' name? The pirates. The pirates that are, that were annoying the shipping lane that comes down the east coast of Africa.
Through the Suez Canal.
And then have to go through the Gulf of Aden through the Suez Canal. So yeah. Fun times, Amut. Fun times.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, for those of us, I think I, you know, I think I partly talked about this sometimes last week.
Mm.
That for those of us, and that I think that was a New Year's Eve. For those of us that are in, you know, one thing I like about countries that has political stability, like we fortunately find ourselves right now. You have a schedule. You have a very predictable schedule of where I'm going to be tomorrow, where I'm going to be take next month, for example.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I need to apply for this course to, you know, to study at this institution. I have to be, I want to go on leave. I want to go on holiday. I want to go on this. The thing is, you have a predictable schedule, but in a war zone, you don't have any of that.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't know where's the nearest help. Even if you were short, where's, you know, if there's any functioning hospital or clinic in any close proximity to save your life.
Mm.
That's one. And two, even if there's one functioning health facility, if it's not taken over by the bad guys. Like, I think one thing that's, one of the most painful thing about war zones for me is what it does to the people that find that are unfortunate enough to find themselves in that area. Because it's not, you are sleeping here today, you don't know where you're going to be tomorrow. Whether you are going to be running to a different location. Like, how does, Peter Weller of the History Channel puts it in a very sarcastic way that the death, you know, when he was talking about the Black Death,
mm.
that this is a disease that killed so fast that you could have lunch with your relatives here on Earth and then dine with your ancestors in heaven.
No, it was pretty painful as well.
Yeah, it was.
That transition period, you know, was pretty painful as well. You could have breakfast, as you said.
So.
And by dinner.
By transition period, you mean the, as you bid farewell.
Yeah, and from how your health literally goes from being squeaky, you know.
Clean.
Okay.
Look, medieval Europe, I get it.
You know,
squeaky clean is too much of a stretch.
It's a state of mind, you know. It's a perspective. So, yeah. And you know what's the worst part? It actually came back in last year.
Black Death?
Yeah.
Wait, we have a cure for that now, right?
Yeah, the bubonic plague as a cure.
Yeah.
But somehow, somewhere, it popped up. I think it's either in the US or somewhere in Europe.
Of course, it's the
US. But the bubonic plague, for some reason, came back. It popped up. And people are asking questions, what's up with the health systems of these two zones? But yeah, it's slightly besides the point from our discussion.
Yeah.
Because we're still talking about what are the risks to Africa if World War III pops up?
Look, man, as a Christian,
yeah.
I've been working on preparing for the second coming of Christ. Now I have to prepare for the, in the event of World War III. Now I have two preparations that I'm looking at. One is more questionable in theory, and the other is more kaboom.
Well, it's you have to imagine yourself. It's either you are playing the Fallout game in real life.
Oh yeah.
And remember, the Fallout game's theory, its whole storyline, takes place in the 1950s, when a nuclear fallout happened, when a nuclear war happened between the Soviet Union and the NATO powers, and things just went. And then you've got all these particular mutated situations happening around. Yes, it sounds all fictional.
And there's Hunger Games coming in there. Like
in
really
between
fast.
As well. And you've got all these miniature small countries that are everywhere. And it's really a wild, wild west / sci-fi / situation. Obviously, the Fallout game and the storyline has a alien element in there as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Africa.
Obviously, with that, that's not what we're venturing into, guys, for today's discussion. But the risks are real, specifically for Africa. The first trade shock or the first risk that Africa could face is a trade shock, Helmut. Because we've got to look at the zones that are busy doing the flexing.
Yeah.
That are busy showing off the, you know, biceps, triceps, and all kinds of, you know.
All kinds of septs.
You know, that too, and muscle compounds, you know, to show who's got the biggest of what going for them.
Yeah.
The downside is the particular situation looks as insecure as anyone could possibly have ever thought. Why am I saying this? Well, we saw 3 January, right?
Yeah.
So that was, we're looking at potentially something happening in the range of the global oil supply, the global oil price. I'm still waiting on whether or not Donald Trump has met with the CEOs of the oil major, the major oil companies in the US. So as I can see, you know, primarily did they actually have the meeting with him? Because apparently the noise was pretty loud up until Wednesday, before we had yesterday's show, up until Wednesday, that the oil CEOs did not want to meet Donald Trump on this, on Venezuela. They literally said there is no benefit in going into Venezuela in the current state of the situation. Remember, we still threw in the slight banana peel joke there by saying, yeah, and in between you might have a bunch of Venezuelans that would not be welcome to seeing Americans on the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ad break and we come back, guys.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. That's why we're committed to bringing you lower prices on all the essentials you need. Like 5 kg Sugar King white sugar, only $99.99. And 4 kg Real Good frozen mixed chicken portions for just $199.99. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 11 January 2026. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready Steady Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa bora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. The time is, we have 14 minutes to the hour of five. We just started with Homran and we are here to ask one very simple question. Don't worry. Don't start packing your bags to run God knows where.
Mm.
This is just a scenario more like a scenario that's, you know, that's being discussed, not just, not just in Africa. This is basically the worry the world over right now.
Mm.
And the question is, if the political instability escalates to a global level military conflict, what is that going to do to the political and the economic, call it infrastructure and the word connection have been ruined. I want to say political connections that have been done and the economic connections. But now when I say political connection, I mean diplomatic relations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the slide me and, slide me an iPhone or through SIM cards connection. No, they're not those type of connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what will that do? Well, the short answer is, nothing good for anyone. Now the thing is, this is, I think COVID-19 lockdown sort of like, reminded us the importance of having a plan B in every situation.
Or building up to a resilient factor, Hamut.
Like having strong enough internal mechanisms of how to be independent if your external pipes that are feeding you with everything, be it technology or business, you have to come up with a plan of if this channel is blocked, this is my plan B.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. When he pointed that out, the first thing that came to my mind is that this whole tension over Greenland erupts in the entire Western Europe.
True.
And that's the whole of NATO.
True.
Do you have an idea what will happen to our meat?
Okay, so take out the United Kingdom out of this.
Yeah, because of the whole... Oh, wait.
Take out the UK from this. Remember that the UK has got a weird relationship specifically with the EU.
Yeah. Wait, was that before or just after the Brexit when the whole relationship went sour?
Ever since Napoleon, technically. Ever since Napoleon.
Does everything keeps going back to the French?
Well, because Napoleon wanted to invade the UK. Everyone else, even the Spanish, didn't care about the UK. But why you take it that far is primarily you still see the same, if I can call it dumb themes pop up.
Yeah.
So Jeffrey Sachs loves calling because I tried reading into game theory last year, but then I stopped at one particular point, but I know the interview he had recently with, the Norwegian guy's name, Glenn Deason. Recently after the 3 January, kidnapping and arrest of Maduro, because I have to call it what it is. I mean, I cannot see any particular ordinary person, even you, Helmut, you can see there was no open conflict.
No.
It was just technical and legal jargon that Donald Trump used as an excuse technically to do what the Americans did to Venezuela. We can all see it. It's not about shouting support, because I'm not saying I'm a Venezuela fan, or I just feel sorry for them, and specifically for Maduro, but you technically see what is the big issue. However, the argument, if you look at what happened with Ukraine, there is not enough information, and if the information exists, the information, you also have to view it with a bag of salt, not even with a pinch of salt, a bag of salt, a whole ball of garlic and some holy water in between, because you have to try and understand if you're doing the fact checking and verification process.
Yeah.
Now I always sit with that when I read certain articles. What are the authorities? Who are the sources and what do they say?
Yeah.
And is it written in a way that has bias or no bias, or it tries to say objective and neutral? So much of the arguments that we've seen in the English-speaking world regarding the Ukraine conflict has been pro-Ukraine.
Very much.
But the very few arguments that are trying to stay neutral and highlighted and stayed on facts have said, but no one complained about the misinformation and the misleading arguments that were given by 2 heads of state to invade Iraq, as well as also the destruction that happened to Libya, as well as also the weird scenarios that have taken place all across the world, specifically in that Middle Eastern zone, regarding, you know, how to deal with the after effects of a conflict zone.
Yeah.
So now we come to a picture of, okay, so what is Trump trying to achieve? Now, remember, these are all like repercussions, or they're like waves let's call it shock waves. So we're on the African continent. The first thing that we get impacted with as Africa is trade.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would ask yourself, how do we get impacted with trade? Remember when I said the resilience factor building up to that scenario?
Yeah.
So what do we need to do? Which is why the AFCFTA is being promoted so heavily across the continent. Even the South Africans last year, when the South Africans realized, remember that the video I sent you about the Pan-African Parliament session that was held in South Africa? And I told you, watch out for the South African speeches that would come later on about the resilience factor. And the South Africans were saying, we need to trade more. Yeah. You guys need to buy more into South African industrial complex. We need to trade more internally. And you could hear sort of like the appeal by the South African parliamentarians, because they were hosted by the South African Western Province Parliament, or that provincial government. And they were citing, do this, we need to stand together as Africa. And I was like, oh, so just because you guys went and submitted that complaint at the ICC against Israel because of Palestine. Now you guys are worried with the rest of Africa, because the South Africans had this idea that the rest of us don't exist.
For a very long time.
For a very long time. Us and Namibia and Botswana, you know, sometimes you would see on Twitter, you would see one South African saying, you guys must go check up on Namibia and Botswana. Are they still there? And then you would hear, you know, the whole Twitter war kick off once again about who's relevant and who's not. But the downside is, South Africa is potentially Africa's only, like truly industrialized, nation. Now, what's the ramifications and what is the fallout regarding trade shocks? The trade shocks is countries like Namibia, which are dependent on shipping raw materials out of this country. That is the first trade shock. Look at specifically how we perform as a country. Okay. The big fear is that Trump wants to maneuver for one or other particular sort of like direct confrontation with China. He's clearly said he's moving away from a direct confrontation with Russia. But his predecessor, Biden, was openly angling
against
Russia
and
staying away from China. So now you can see the two polar opposites in the political discourse of the United States. The Democrats are anti-Russia. The Republicans seem to be anti-China.
But they seem to be somehow okay-ish with Russia.
Exactly. And the Democrats seem to be okay-ish with China. They are willing to do all kinds of manner of trade and situations, but the Russians, you know, Putin and the Russians are just evil. So when you go and look up, for example, just for interest's sake, as extra reading, if you go look up, where does Russophobia come from? Russophobia or anti-Russian sentiment is something that has built up, that comes through from the French. Okay, not from the French. When I say not actually from the French, is because the French later on found out that the book that was written, this was in the 1700s, was like a completely fake story. It was, you know,
call it a smear campaign.
It was basically a smear campaign back then. But if we look at the discussion today, you see the Russophobia everywhere. And then Trump comes along and then Trump highlights, you know, the anti-China sentiment, because that's what he positioned at the start in his first term as well.
Yeah.
So now we sit with a confused United States. All the academics, I mentioned this yesterday, acknowledge that this is the last breath of a dying empire. Professor Jung, the Jeffrey Sachs sentiments, he's mentioned it a lot last year. Even the Australian economist Stephen Keane, alongside his friend Richard Murphy, alongside other particular economists that are neutral and they are academics, all of them say this is the dying embers of an empire. Second scenario is also the particular manner in which the national security strategy was written in.
Yeah.
Which I could not read past page 22 or 21, where they mentioned the Western Hemisphere, that no one else can get into the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, like in a loop.
Yeah. Because it sounded like it was written by a 12-year-old that can't think past certain particular points in the argument. So, yeah, I know the 12-year-old statement is pretty bold, but it's literally the situation.
No, not really, not that, even though that's that's funny. But who is this? Look, when, you know, every time that we talk about, okay, what are some of the, you know, more like contingency plans to put in mind, to put in place because of, especially with regards to AI.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be becoming more and more powerful.
Yeah.
So, not that we need contingency plans because AI is going to be, you know, evil and then we have Skynet.
Yeah.
That's not the picture that's in my head. I've always been about, there's nothing wrong with AI. who is going to run it? That's where you have the biggest problem. And right now, when I look at, when I look at the, the world's biggest economy and the world's biggest military, I'm looking at the leadership and I can't help but go, yeah, you know what? This is cementing conspiracy theorists. Because now the picture I'm getting is that guy who went into a country, kidnapped another president, illegally under, under Article 2 of the UN Charter, and then take that president who was kidnapped to jail, to a court that's supposed to be serving justice. Are you listening to yourself?
Do you know what's the worst part?
That's the guy who's going to be in charge.
Do you know what's the worst part of how Maduro appeared, he and his wife?
Yeah.
Maduro's wife showed up with a swollen eye in the court yesterday, apparently, when she also appeared.
So
now, firstly,
you can't break the law and then say, you know what, I can break them. I can, it's just fine. Because look at it this way. If kidnapping is okay, then selling drugs is just fine too.
Which it is not. Kidnapping is not okay.
It's not okay. Now, if kidnapping is not okay, then trafficking drugs is also not okay.
Yeah.
Because if you make kidnapping okay, that means also whatever you're kidnapping this person for, it's also by and large should also be okay.
Mm.
The thing is, when you look at the leadership that is, and you are going like, okay, so you're telling me that's the guy that's, people like him are going to pop up in the power structure every now and then to run some of the most powerful piece of infrastructure, in this case, AI.
Yeah.
That's disturbing.
The weird thing is also, Helmut, the AI bubble is becoming more and more clearer.
Apparent and more closer to busting.
Yes. Okay. Why do I say this? Most of the economists that have looked at the particular values of the stock exchanges of the United States have noticed that there's a lot of overvaluation. The best particular picture to ever get is from the discussion that you had last year. While I couldn't help with the home run, the one about the Central Bank of the UK, who brought out that report saying when they looked at the assets,
things are not looking good.
Things are not looking good in the US, and specifically around the tech sector. So, if people are still having are still touting and promoting AI, I'm really sorry, guys. That thing will fall flat because, I mean, it won't be long specifically because I cannot borrow money from you, Helmut, and then use the money that you borrowed me to buy stock in your company.
Yeah.
How in what world does that sound healthy? I mean, even the Credit Agreements Act in Namibia, which is the Credit Agreements Act from South Africa, says if I'm buying something on loan from you, ne?
Yeah.
And I'm struggling to do the down payments on the amount that I owe you. You may not borrow me money to pay down the installment, the monthly payment that I am struggling to honor. You may not do that. You may not do, and exactly when I give you that particular logic that exists, firstly, it is deemed illegal by the Credit Agreements Act. Secondly, it obviously shows that I will immediately owe you more money because you're giving me money again.
Yeah. How am I supposed to service that debt?
Exactly. Meaning you're contributing to a particular sort of like irresponsible position that I've got.
Yeah.
Now, what are they doing in the US specifically around that? Now, here's the second thing. Yes, it's a good thing you highlighted the AI discussion. So what is the current biggest craze going on the African continent regarding mining? Is the rare earth and critical raw minerals exploration and extraction activities. Yeah. Yes, oil, yes, copper, yes, the other precious metals and the other minerals are still being extracted, obviously, but this craze specifically over critical rare earth and raw materials has been the latest boom taking place.
Yeah.
Now, that obviously will impact the opportunity for, because the African governments are not listening. I'll also say it bluntly. Even Namibia, We're not listening. We keep promoting the mining sector over other sectors.
So everything is centered around the extractive industry. So if that side of the African economy goes bust, then everything goes.
Yeah. The downside, the nice thing that was in Harambe Prosperity Plan 2, that we did not see, you and me, in NDP 6, was the acknowledgement to utilizing the EITI, the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative,
yeah.
Which literally was going to be this holistic plan of the mining sector, the local finance ministry, and related ministries to the activity of mining, which includes Ministry of Mines, and the mining companies, and the shipping companies, and the other countries where these companies are registered in with their governments. There would be this complete trail of transparent activity saying that, let's say you pull this 1 kilogram of copper out of the ground, that it is recorded at every step through the process. So that the average Namibian on the street can see how much value was added at every level, how much was paid for this 1 kilogram of copper, and what did the Namibian government and the average Namibian get, or even the Namibian mine worker get from that 1 kilogram of copper. No mention of it is made in NDP 6. No mention of it. So first and foremost, we also have the difference in terms of from moving from one administration in Namibia or in an African country to the next administration. So now you see those particular aspects. Okay, we tout the mining sector once again to sort of like be the carrying sector for Namibia's economic industrialization and development. Now World War III breaks out. The US wants Greenland. Everyone is seeing the posturing towards Greenland is going to be real. However, here's the biggest flaw. Mm. There's already an American base in Greenland.
Yeah.
There's already an American base. The downside is also the territory is a Danish
territory
under the Kingdom of Denmark. The downside is, will this be open warfare between Denmark and the US? Because Denmark keeps rebutting any particular proposals around a payment, like what Alaska was bought from
Russia,
from Imperial Russia in the 1800s, like how what was the other territory that the Americans also bought? It wasn't Hawaii. They were supposed to look after Hawaii, because Hawaii is technically an independent state.
And then they
Then they just decided, you know what,
Queen, goodbye. Next. Yeah.
Everything is ours now. Just like that.
Yeah.
So when we look at the posturing for World War III, firstly, it's technically Europe's biggest problem.
Right now.
It's technically Europe against Russia and Europe against the US.
They're basically sandwiched in problems.
Yeah. Which is, once again, a big issue since the Napoleonic War. Why? The French were the only guys that made the only sense even last year. Which is the same idea that Napoleon had, the failed Austrian painter had, a unified Europe. But under who should be the dominant country dominating the Western Europe zone? Now, the French have been calling for an expansion of or establishing a Euro army, a Euro military.
Yeah.
Germany has been saying no.
Over NATO? More like a replacement, since NATO seems to be...
Well, it started, Helmut, it started with the Munich conference of last year. Where one of our local politicians was invited to. Won't mention names, even though she posted it a lot on her socials, of being invited to the Munich Security Conference. And I was like, what is a Namibian doing there? First and foremost,
you're making my job very easy as a comedian.
I still won't mention, even though you know who it was, Helmut, because I told you who was
pretty
there.
Pretty much.
Yeah. The onset is that Namibia, because I'm also a Namibian, I'm a Namibian who is aggrieved about this particular chapter. we've got an outstanding bone to pick with Germany. So Germany can't go and pick fights with Russia. But what did Germany literally do this past week? Please guess, Helmut. Please guess what they did. Just guess. Any guess. Just throw a guess.
Okay, the frozen assets?
No. Okay. The frozen assets are still frozen. No one can move anywhere regarding the frozen Russian assets.
They're making strides into trying to figure out how they can make a loan off of it to give to Ukraine.
No, still, it won't go anywhere. There is no unilateral consensus between everyone.
The French and the Belgians were like, no, thank you.
Because the unilateral understanding is Russia must pay for something. But Putin is on record for saying, literally, that they will, repair, rebuild the areas that they bombed and destroyed. But the agreement is so easy, Helmut. Ukraine has to stay neutral. And I've highlighted the reason as to why Ukraine has to stay neutral back in last year. Why? Because Ukraine is part of the founding members of the Commonwealth of Independent States. Not the Commonwealth that forms part of the former British Empire.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth of Independent States is former Soviet countries. It literally came into force like 2 or 3 months after after everyone became independent in 1991. They're in that part, specifically Eastern Europe and of the Caucasus region, right there. And they quickly mobilized to establish this bloc. They quickly did it. So they have a common foreign policy. That means that common foreign policy is already entrenched within Ukraine's constitution. Hence the reason why you can understand that there are certain no-go areas regarding Ukraine. But for some reason, NATO and the EU just don't want to understand this point.
I think part of the reason is something that we witnessed a couple of days ago. Stephen Miller appeared on CNN.
Mm.
And Stephen Miller is the gentleman that's currently serving as the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy.
Mm.
Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. Now, while speaking to CNN, one of the questions that he was asked was, do you think the president is, will go as far as considering military confrontation with Denmark over Greenland?
Mm.
Now, of course, being a politician that he is, he was just beating around the bush like a lot, but he did say something important.
Yeah.
Where he asked that, what are they basing their claim of Greenland
mm.
on? What are they basing it on? Because, he seemed to have been pointing out that, the Danish does not have any legal, maybe historical claim over Greenland. That's the Deputy Chief of Staff. On the archive
mm.
of the State of Department,
mm.
it literally says, agreement to amend and supplement 1951 agreements of the defense of Greenland.
Mm.
This was around the time when they basically reached that agreement, somewhere between 1951 and 1953 for the establishment of this whole security agreements that led to that military base, which is now in Greenland. Part of that agreement which was amended, in 2004, part of the agreement literally states, consider the development of Greenland since the conclusion of the defense agreement, including the change of Greenland status from colony to that of an equal part of the Kingdom of Denmark. How did a deputy chief of staff miss that? It's either he's really dumb or he's doing everything deliberate. Now, he's not dumb. He's a pretty smart guy.
Mm.
Yeah, he's a pretty smart guy. This is one of those things that's making me go like, you can bring as much reason as possible.
Mm.
they're not going to take it as long as the goal, from the national security strategy, it seems to me like this administration had made up their mind to do a lot of things that is counter international law and international order.
Yes.
They are not crazy. They are not nuts. They are not idiots. They are very, you know, they're methodical. They thought this through.
Mm.
It's chaotic to you and me, but they thought this through. It's like, they are ready to use, the end justifies the means as an excuse through pretty much everything.
Oh, it says so in that strategy. Remember? The end.
So in other words, to hell with the international law.
The means has to justify the, okay, the sentence is just a little bit around,
yeah.
But the means has to justify the ends. But they also stress that not every conflict or every zone specifically will be of benefit to the US. That first few pages makes absolute sense. You know, that there is where the logic is up until you get to page 22 or 21, where they speak about the Western Hemisphere, which literally shouts to the Monroe Doctrine. So what they went and did was they just went and found the Monroe Doctrine somewhere. And
from 1823.
And now they just want to reenact it in the modern day sense. But here's the cause.
That's just like me using scripture to justify the nonsense that I'm doing. This is about, as old as time almost, not literally.
And you potentially...
It's just an excuse.
And you potentially telling every woman in Namibia that they actually do come from the ribs of their husbands.
You have to, therefore, you are not allowed to say no to anything I'll tell you.
Exactly. Which is also the biggest, horse manure that you can think of. It's not just horse manure.
It's a whole pile.
Yeah.
Now, when you're dealing with an administration, and this is not just taking place outside. There's one senator, I think, of Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. He's a former Navy.
Mm.
I mean, he's a very smart guy because he also ran parts of NASA at some point.
Mm.
A bunch of astronauts were under his command. He also served, I think, for 20 plus years in the Navy. And then he decided to become a senator. Now, in the early days of before the whole Maduro situation, they were bombing the heck out of those boats.
Mm.
Yeah. He's one of the five senators. The gentleman's name is former Navy Captain Mark Kelly. He's one of the five senators that actually wanted to address servicemen and women in the U.S. government, in the U.S. military directly, telling them that there's a lot of unlawful orders going on here.
Mm.
You have got to remember your oath, one, and you have to understand that you are allowed to disobey unlawful orders.
Mm.
Right now, he's fighting for his career.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because what's currently also happening is, this is the second point I wanted to highlight in terms of the risks that Africa can face. So, the aim is obviously that data and facts need to guide logic and logical approaches. So far, in the national security strategy that you and I highlighted yesterday, there is no factual basis because it technically speaks to a yesteryear period of, what did we experience, Helmut? Colonialism.
Yeah.
So colonialism...
Either it's my way or the highway.
Exactly. But it's as the people are now calling it, gunboat diplomacy.
Oh yeah.
Meaning, you know, it's a Jack Sparrow guy showing up with a massive,
his crew and
military ship. They're outside your city and, you know, just tells you it's, yes or no. Sign on the dotted line.
Yeah.
The country is mine. So this is the situation happening with Venezuela. And this is what everyone is fearing, specifically in Denmark and in the EU, is going to happen with Greenland. But there's already a military base, even though in black and white, like you read out, it's acknowledged. Greenland is acknowledged.
Geographical, constitutionally,
yeah.
The landmass belongs to
Denmark.
Denmark.
Yeah. And the people on there, they speak, some sort of a Scandinavian dialect, literally, and they have the names as well. So you can literally find various elements of evidence pointing towards Denmark's ownership. Now, this makes things tricky. Why? Primarily when you have to look at where Africa finds themselves. Much of Africa is already dealing with hotspots of conflict zones.
Yeah.
You remember the other literature piece that I sent you a little bit earlier today, looking at the current conflict elements in the world.
Yeah.
Two or three of them are in Africa. Two or three. So it's Sudan, the internal situation in Sudan, Eritrea and Ethiopia's relationship with each other. It's Mali and Burkina Faso. And there is, technically, yeah. So it's those three specifically. Even though it's still boiling a little bit here in the Rwanda, on the Rwanda DRC border.
Yeah.
So we sit as the African continent, we sit with these specific conflict zones. Okay. Ethiopia and Eritrea is just bad relations, you know, it's just bad blood.
Even Israel and Somaliland situation.
That too, that also increases the bad blood element. But I watched a press conference, Ahmed, in the middle of the holiday period regarding, what's the guy from Burkina Faso, Traore, held a press conference, but it was like a presidential situation. And you should have seen the language that he was using in this press conference.
Isn't it French?
No, you're going on the actual language. I'm talking about the kind of words like that he was using.
Wording.
Yeah, the wording. The wording was like open threat to someone. Yeah, we will deal with the enemies of Burkina Faso. And yeah, we will, there will only be destruction and violence of those enemies that, that threaten the independence of Burkina Faso. Now you don't know who it is because there are other dignitaries sitting in the audience. And it follows right on after the day after Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger established that military alliance. That security pact, that alliance. Yeah. It literally followed just right after that. But they were in Ouagadougou, the capital of Burkina Faso. And you sit there thinking, what is actually going on here? Now, we obviously have these internal elements that are not coinciding with the true aim that AU wants to achieve. The second scenario is, if you have to look at what has been the most, if you can call it the most bedeviling situation always hampering Africa, has been that we constantly went and asked for development aid and development financing, which has been at most and many particular scenarios, many African countries were dependent upon US aid from the US. And obviously, Donald Trump has gone and flipped that whole script on his head, threw it completely out of the window, and now he's telling, which is a good thing. This is the one thing I agree with him on, is literally it'll be country to country aid assistance.
Yeah.
So that means Donald Trump does not say that aid, financing for aid projects in Africa is out of the question. All he said is this time it'll be his government talking directly to the recipient government representatives who require this aid. And it won't be worked through NGOs. It'll be ministry to ministry, president to president, government to government, country to country negotiations, which is a very good position to take. I get to understand that position a lot. But then here's the situation, Ahmed. If a shift in global aid takes place, this means that as conflicts might flare up even more in 2026, international aid could be redirected away from development priorities in Africa, because aid costs money and money is needed to buy weapons, and that if further conflicts start escalating.
You know, now that you point that out, you have to think about how many factories we depend on that produce a lot of stuff that we use on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens in a country that's at war. They repurpose a lot of factories to cater for the military.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't have much factories outside of South Africa and Morocco and Nigeria and Kenya and Egypt.
That means the price of everything that those factories make, the products that they make, becomes very scarce because they don't produce them anymore. The price goes through the roof.
Exactly. Exactly. And South Africa would start seeing that it's too much to supply the other billion Africans on the continent alone. Yeah, it will make them look good, but they will be, what do you call it? The demand will greatly outstrip what they can supply.
Like one scary thing when you actually picture that worst case scenario of this whole, you know, the recent global tensions escalating is that, World War One and Two is, especially World War Two is an excellent example. Actually, World War One is an excellent example that every time that two major powers are locked horns militarily, you have this a bunch of, you know, they have to go on a lobbying campaign. So, because, you know, they have to go on a lobbying campaign to sort of like, get as much, you know, as many countries as possible on their side. And they will both do that. Now, the next thing you know, you will find neighboring countries that are halfway across the planet, beefing with each other because they, you know, they're on a different, they're both on different sides of the war.
Mm.
So, now you have, take for example, Greenland, or more like, you know, the EU, goes to war with the US. Now, we have an EU embassy here, and we have an American embassy. Now we'll be like, okay, so, which one of you guys are we going to side with? Because, well, clearly you guys started it. And
it's literally what happened with the Ukraine conflict.
Yeah.
How the African ambassadors at the UN General Assembly, were asked, you know, vote in favor of condemning Russia.
Those are the things that you definitely expect.
Yeah. And the particular sort of like, what was the testimonies that came out from those African representatives, how a lot of them said how they were being, threatened, how their governments, the countries were being threatened if they didn't vote in favor of, one or other particular, proposal.
Pick our side or else.
Yeah. Or if you abstain.
They call it Turaboy negotiation, you know, Turaboy diplomacy.
No, it's even worse than Turaboy. This literally, you know,
on
like
steroid.
Yeah, twisting the knife somewhere where it's stuck. So we will once again reach such a particular level. Now, the tension is already there. I have a sneaky suspicion that the non-aligned movement is not doing much, even though it is actually doing what it is. Doing in, what it said it would do in spirit, not getting involved in the fights or the arguments of
in spirit, seriously.
Because they are doing it actually, Almut.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, look at Namibia first and foremost.
Yeah.
If people ask us on which side of the fence are you getting, no, we are an enemy of no one and a friend to everybody.
Everyone.
So that even includes what do they call it? Pariah states like North Korea, who is not in the UN.
Mm-hmm.
This could even include Myanmar.
Well, you guys are mad at them. They didn't do anything to us. So we're good.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So, you and that person.
You sort your own issues out.
That person also beating you up. You know, you are also a friend of mine. I'm your friend and the guy beating you up is, I'm also his friend, you know. But you know, you guys settle it between each other.
Yeah.
So, yes, fence sitting nations, in the non-aligned movement that includes Namibia. Yeah, we can still occupy that position because this is not our fight.
Yeah.
But it does influence our own particular economic existence. Because what then happens, Helmut, if that client state, that customer state that we are shipping copper and diamonds and whoever to?
Meat. Yeah.
If that particular country doesn't have money anymore, who's going to supply them with money? Who's going to supply them with money? So the downside literally is it obviously calls on a greater particular role for diplomacy and negotiations. But there is one big sort of like drawback. Yesterday, the Americans decided to announce that they were withdrawing from 66 international and UN-related treaties and organizations, which literally includes something that is existential to Namibia, climate change. Why am I saying existential? Because you can obviously see that Donald Trump does not care whether it is bakingly hot in Namibia and Botswana and Namibia and Botswana is automatically hotter than any other part in the world. He does not care. He wants to pump and
burn,
and burn as much fossil fuels.
Money, baby.
Yeah, because he doesn't care. He really doesn't care. If you ask the particular perspective or motivation as to why they've already began with some sort of misinformation campaign, even in the American government agencies.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a lovely little presentation from a guy who highlighted how the misinformation and the misleading information is now permeating through most American agencies. Much of the scientific departments have been closed down under Trump, who literally study the atmosphere and the climate of the world. Their funding was retracted. The people were fired. The scientists were fired. Universities who were researching the impacts of climate change, their funding was retracted. Their programs were stopped. So now, firstly, we see that they're attacking their own scientists, which is a negative because we need science to help us find the solutions.
Yeah.
But before we continue, we've got the ad break. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back, and this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. And now that we are on this subject of does Africa has any plan in mind, one thing I can't stop thinking about is the early days of 2022, the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war. And what that did to a lot of things, from energy to to food, especially shipping lanes were disrupted. That's the same thing that we saw in 2019 during COVID-19 lockdowns. You saw that anything that disrupts trade causes a lot of economic shocks in a lot of different countries. And if you look at the world today in a way that it's economically intertwined, that means you disrupt one piece, you're looking at a domino effect.
True.
Now, in terms of trade for Africa, we buy, we don't manufacture a lot, and we buy a lot of stuff.
Mm.
And most of it is, and then we sell a lot of raw materials.
Mm.
Now, all these raw materials is now bringing up, now that means if there's any disruption of a global size military conflict, what you are looking at is, you can't sell those, because who are you going to sell it to? They'll tell you that, no, we don't have money for that anymore. We have to spend, to spend as much as possible on defense. This is already an idea that has been that's coming out of Europe since the beginning of Trump's first term. Has been calling for European NATO member states to invest as much as possible in their own defense.
No, to increase to 5%.
To increase their military budget, their military spending. All these things translates into a lot of money, obviously, for defense contractors.
Mm.
But safety is going to come at a price, obviously. That's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But trade alone is one big problem for Africa if the whole thing escalates to a worst-case scenario. But the safety and security is also another aspect.
Yeah.
We just don't have any of that. Now, you have to understand that the US AFRICOM,
mm.
The US AFRICOM, it's headquartered in Germany.
Yes.
Yeah. So that means and a lot of equipment that's used by a lot of military personnel on the African continent, you know, both established and just trigger happy guys. Most of it is coming out. It's coming from out of Africa. So, which makes it very tricky to guarantee security for your own block if you don't manufacture any of these things.
And the largest American army base or military base is in Uganda, in Kampala.
In Africa.
Yes. The largest American base. Which obviously means that if you ever had to look at who's gotten, as well as an omnipresent presence of having military bases everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just the Americans. But there's a weird thing that happened also last year, Helmut, during June. Tulsi Gabbard, the politician that Trump appointed as National Intelligence, U.S. Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, warned last year in a social media video about elites, meaning national leaders and political leaders, threatening with a nuclear war,
yeah,
or pushing the world closer to this nuclear war scenario. The downside has been that Tulsi Gabbard obviously now is in a weird position because it's something that Trump did not like, supposedly. I say supposedly because there was no open sort of like contestation or contest regarding or protest regarding what she did.
Yeah.
But apparently it's a discussion that happened that happened there in June of last year. Now, why do I say this? Primarily because this recent event of 3 January has been a discussion that exposes what many were fearing. Specifically, doing what happened to Maduro and his wife, and obviously that there are still American soldiers in Caracas on the ground, not in the rest of Venezuela, just in Caracas.
Yes, in the capital.
Which obviously makes things picky because Delcy Hernandez or Rodriguez,
the one who took over
after, yeah, the vice president.
Yeah.
Delcy is literally saying that this is an illegal act and it's an act of war that the Americans committed, which everyone is saying this is an act of war you committed.
Including the UN Charter.
Everyone says this. Uh-huh. Now, the downside is, the gunboat diplomacy that Trump deployed means that Trump is the only one acting like a rogue state. He's acting like a rogue nation. We then sit with a weird particular scenario because as Africa, how do you maneuver? What do you wish to do?
Yeah.
So we've got Namibians who are bothered about that visa cost that the Americans applied.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that.
The 11,000 or 17,000 Namibian dollars that we might have to pay for a visa to America. But the Namibians in that argument also have to be realistic and ask themselves, is America a destination that you go often to? Or can you afford a lot closer particular visits? Now some people throw up, yeah, but what about family members, those Namibians that have family members in the US? And then you ask yourself, yeah, so what?
Yeah, family members in the US, I think you can afford it.
The question is still, Helmut, so what?
I think I'm too broke to even leave Klein Windhoek.
The question is still, so what?
Mm.
It's your family chose to be there. If you can't go there because of some weird process that was brought in, you know, tough luck. The world doesn't revolve around you because there's a lot less Namibians that fly that way. And there's
the other way around.
And there's a lot more Americans that fly this way to Namibia. So for who's the actual benefit here? Based upon just data. To who actually scores a benefit out of just air traffic coming to which direction?
Yeah.
Namibia obviously scores it. We can show it with those weird announcements. I'm still waiting on the latest ones coming from the Ministry of Home Affairs because obviously they had to get in a new executive director because the previous guy liked highlighting the extensive benefit that the visa on arrival process, the e-visa, has actually generated so much income and revenue for the ministry and for the government at large. So I still see a benefit. I don't see any benefit of you as a Namibian flying to the U.S.
Let's try to look at this from a Namibian perspective. Again, I would want to point out that World War III is not starting. This is just a discussion that's taking place, actually, not just at Eagle FM here in Windhoek. It's a global concern. That means it's also a continent-wide concern here in Africa.
Yeah.
If the current political instabilities escalate into a global scale war, what does that mean? What will that mean economically in terms of diplomatic relations? Obviously, that would be the first thing to go out through the window.
Mm.
As you'd expect, there would be a lot of lobbying for more military personnel. And you saw this, we saw this during colonialism. Mobutu fought for the French. John Bethel Bokassa fought for the French. Idi Amin fought for the British.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that there was a lot, wherever these colonial powers had significant presence, they also drew military personnel from that area.
Mm-hmm.
So that means one of those things that you'd expect to see in case of a global level military conflict is that you see allies. You see a lot of small guys picking, allies.
Yeah.
And picking an ally means you are going to provide support. And one of those support is most likely going to be what? Military personnel.
Yeah.
Didn't Kenya agree to send the police to Haiti?
Yeah. And those guys were told.
Did they scratch their head? No, they
didn't. Because obviously Kenya wanted to play a larger than life role. I know, I had to say it, Hamoud, but I mean, that's what William...
I know, that is true.
Ruto shows up there with a smile, his lovely suit, and he speaks there in his most eloquent English teacher, accent, and he also does his hand gestures there.
Motivating.
Trying to motivate anybody, and you just, as a fellow African, you go like, why do you want to send your police to Haiti? Why do you want to put them in so much,
that's a lot of danger.
In so much danger.
Yeah.
Versus sorting out the riots that he had in his own country.
Yep.
So now he's putting pressure on his own police force by trying to divert police personnel to a UN sanctioned operation. Everyone in the UN was also going like, are the Kenyans the right guys to send?
I know. And look, I would actually go as far as to say that if you are an African who speaks English, I would assume you have read the history of Haiti.
Yeah.
They kicked some serious French behinds big time. That's how determined they are.
Mm.
The last place you send me to go and restore whatever your definition of order is would be Haiti.
Mm.
No.
The downside is also with Haiti, Helmut, is that Haiti is ungovernable. I'm really sorry. Haiti is ungovernable.
Which is why I'm saying...
Even if you bring in the lack of financing to run themselves, the reparations that they are paying France for becoming independent.
Wait, they are still paying?
It's still ongoing, and it's must being enforced by the Americans most.
This is exactly part of the problem.
Because of the Monroe Doctrine.
This is exactly part of the problem. That's not a reparation. That's
how
extortion.
Do I pay you? How do I pay you?
For colonizing me.
And for granting me the honor of becoming independent. Why must I pay you that money?
This is what the British faced, right? This is what, all these things, if you look at it, all boils down to, sadly, private interest.
Mm.
Because the British, after they abolished slavery in the 1830s, one thing that they faced was that they had to compensate all those private slave owners that lost their quote-unquote property.
Mm.
And now to sort of like compensate those ones, they went to private banks. Again, you see, there's private everywhere. They went to private banks, borrowed a behind load of money, and then gave that money to those people that lost their, quote-unquote, lost their properties.
Yeah.
And then they now had to service that debt to those private banks. Up until when? 2015? That means descendants of the people that were enslaved also participated into repaying, into servicing that debt. It's ridiculous. Again, that is exactly why every time someone say, Kim Jong-un must give up his nukes, I'm like, no, he shouldn't. Because I know if I was him, I wouldn't.
Well, here's the other thing also, Amon. It's the only thing as to why Kim Jong-un had not been invaded by any American president.
Because no one is suspecting that he has nuclear. Everyone knows he has.
They know he's the thing can actually fly to you. They all know the thing can fly to you. Ad break, guys, before we come back.
Iko kuku kanga, eka waka sinka, no ya ano kasing, kawaka inhaka kamaka Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. Iko kuku kanga ngangu mumse orugu inhaka inhaung, kisiti geto ma I okoka inhosin. Kani amaku okon amaka wa ano ka akataha. Asikure, ban ano kawa, kumibia ano akaka. Ketong ongkatatin amaku kan e ketawar kaha. Sisa tanjakan amaku olu amakawan anuk a wasisa kogia katosis mungha. Communal Land Reform Act, Act 5 of 2002 kukokhaka achisendo ha. Kise te kogia ka kokhamaka wakan anuk a katosis mungha. Ajo waka karaka wa kauka mariga ko ajo kominaka trunkwe. Amaku okok amakawan anuk a How did Angaka Chosaka Hemes Cup mean? So I am ha, Waka Anuka, Wamarka, Amga, then Unkaka, Nakunka Shias in Sengu Kamaha. Punjaka Anuka, Hotu Tanga Kanka and Hamu Akaga, Okoka Kunka Chisitigaka, Katoha. I am Clark at the Sinka Chiso Sundotiko Geha, Kaoka Amapunk, Amakawa Akaga, Oklaka Traditional Authority. Communal Land Port, the Ministry can do so so to make a quality ha. Mukosison kaya, kawakawan muka chessens, aka damise tito kuteha. Ministry kawakuko kosinja kawakawa, a chessen, se toko nukamaka kwakateha. Anuka kum, the kakereka toko kum, okokuku de. Now we do our cousin, se toko sison kaya, kawaka radio boom, kaitoko nukamaka we. Kajaga government ewa Namibia ama Kwaka Republic kawa Germany ka Kamaka Germany Development Bank ha Kaka location Aka ni ama kwika ministry Kanduwasin seko to ama Kwaka public relation Kanduwasin Kanungu kamaka Ministry of Agriculture Fisheries, Water and Land Reform Kaka telefono makawa Nel says Ian Kwen Nel A Siva says Nel C
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetida oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Nune udo otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushe ndife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu omafelane Eagle FM.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we are, well, this wonderful Friday with an awesome weather in the capital. We are talking about the recent geopolitical tensions rising through the stratosphere. Actually, at this point, they are through the ionosphere. So the question that a lot of, not just Africa, but a lot of regional blocs and a lot of individual countries are asking themselves is, is if this tension escalates to the point of a global level military conflict, then what would that mean for diplomatic relations, economic relations, and basically the cost of living, I think, which is already through the roof? What would that mean? Now, that's actually a scary thought if you start, because we have presidents at this point. That's a good thing.
Mm.
Yeah, I remember was that Macky Sall who was the head of the African Union at the time, in the early days of the Russia-Ukraine war. After we realized that the brown bread we have been eating for a very long time is made out of wheat out of Ukraine, and that's when.
Why you reference the brown bread?
I'm a huge fan of brown bread, peanut butter sandwich. Huge fan.
Yeah.
The question that comes from that is that two countries in Europe were at war. Two countries. Yeah. They still are at war. And that impacted our bread, literally and figuratively.
Mm.
Now, a global one...
Well, it impacted our pasta and our pasta prices, and there was something else regarding the wheat. Because we were given the aspect in terms of that the bread prices are fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the pasta and the other wheat products, wheat-based and grain-based
and
products.
Those, which includes
the bread.
That's not, the painful thing here is that, guys, please appreciate your culture. None of this is our staple food. How the heck did we transition to that?
Yeah.
But, turns out it's, when the German, the British and the French were colonizing us politically and economically, the Italians were colonizing us culinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Culinarily.
Giving us all kinds of grains.
All kinds of grains. Like, just walk into any kitchen and you see Italian everywhere.
Mm.
Yeah. So, that's something that's basically worth thinking about.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of economic disruptions, but also in terms of security. Yeah. Now, when two powers, big powers, go to war, they try to recruit minions. And if you look at the bot diplomacy that was going on prior to the kidnapping of the Venezuelan president.
Mm.
Then, and also the threatening and firing and dismissing of everyone that questions authority of the White House right now.
Mm.
It paints even a scarier picture, one of which is, you can't negotiate your way out of it.
Mm.
So, diplomacy in its old traditional sense of let's sit around the table and talk. It's not at the table here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of, it's either you have to do it my way or you do it your, or we do it the highway.
Yeah.
Now, this language can be traced, at least as far as I trace it back. I managed to trace it back Dick Cheney's justification, more like, beating war drums for the Iraq invasion back in 2003.
Mm. Alongside his good buddy Donald Rumsfeld
Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have Bush Jr.
Mm.
Also, they kept saying the exact same thing. We'll first give them an easy way to do it. Or if they want to do it the hard way, we'll just do it, go that route too.
Mm.
And this is the same language that Donald Trump used before the beginning of the whole board diplomacy, which subsequently led to the kidnapping of the Venezuelan president.
Yeah.
In other words, we will just ask you to do something, which is why I keep calling it, Tura negotiation tactics of HMA and then Plan B, exile your stick. And, because
it's not Plan B, Almut. It's HMA off execute. It's not Plan B. It's the threat.
It's the same plan.
Give it to me. Or
now, or else.
Or left hand start striking.
Yeah. So, this is before you are, this is before global level, military conflict.
Yeah.
Now, in the world, in the middle of global conflict, you can imagine that will even escalate to the point of you're just being told you have to give us this and this and this and these supplies. We have to set up this military base as a, more of a launch pad in your country, or else. So it's the world gone nuts.
So far, in the NATO, Western Europe, North American context, it seems to be. You are correct with a nuts reference, Helmut. The downside of what's currently going on. Yes, we are seeing bold, like in bold and in HD, you know, colors, not referencing our other colleague who has HD as his initials. I'm sorry, HD. Well, the running joke was there, you know.
World War III is about to start.
Is it high definition? So we see everything in these bold colors. Okay, it's no longer HD. It's no longer high definition. It's now 4K. The resolution quality. So we see everything now in 4K and in digital formats. Currently right now is a discussion of the impacts that are happening. Still, I am still waiting for the UN Security Council to meet. The South Africans called for a UN Security Council meeting about Venezuela.
Did you listen to Jeffrey Sachs' 8-minute speech?
Yeah.
That speech is going down in history as one of my favorite.
Look, Helmut, I feel sorry for Sachs because Sachs is an American living in current day America. Yeah. The downside is, it seems like there is a censorship program going on in the U.S. to censor anyone that is anti-Trump or anti-Trump policies.
Don't question authority.
And anti-Trump authority.
You know what that means?
Sachs is someone who is anti-war.
Yeah.
So, he's not anti-Israel, even though the Israelis have labeled him as being anti-Israel, and even using the misnomer term anti-Semite, even though you can tell any person using that term, an anti-Semite means you're also anti-Iraq. And then they would keep quiet. No, it's only only the Israelis that can claim word. And then you go like, "Ay, bra, what's a good praje? What are you saying? How can you say you are the only people that live there that live up to the term, but everyone knows that the term speaks about all the peoples, the various demographics that live there as being Semitic." However, we are slightly also digressing. So I feel sorry for Sachs in that sense. Yes, people like Yanis Varoufakis, who lives in Europe, who is trying to do a political thing in Europe, they are facing European pressures because he established this multi-country political party.
Yeah,
I don't know if you heard what he did.
I've heard.
The party's name is DiEM25.
Yeah,
so it's this pro working class,
and it's very pro-European, anti-capitalist, in its cutthroat form that's being practiced today.
And it has this society first viewpoint, and it's anti-war, and it's anti-NATO, this political party that Varoufakis
established. NATO is like a mafia.
But that's
Yanis.
The downside is of these forces is that they are literally fighting an uphill battle. These dissenting voices. Now, in Africa, the problems we already have could be exacerbated even further. Meaning, let's for example say Europe decides to fight a two-front battle. On one side,
they have Russia.
They've got Russia. On the other side,
they have the US.
US with Greenland. Mm-hmm. Now, the two biggest economies are the guys that are supplying, are the two guys supplying the most to the Ukraine conflict. What are they going to do for Denmark and Greenland? America already does not like the current European elite that is there, meaning the current crop of European politicians. Yeah. The Americans don't like it. They don't like those guys. They don't want to hear about soft politics and the likes, but they wish to see a stronger Europe. And then the question I asked you earlier that I answered during the ad break.
Yeah.
Of what did Germany do just now recently, this past 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay, big answer, big reveal, guys. Germany went and opened their first military base in Latvia, a former Soviet and Russian territory. Latvia was former Russian territory. So too was Lithuania. So too was Estonia. They were the first three countries that the Commonwealth of Independent States asked, do you guys want to be part of the CIS? And then they said, no, thank you. We want to be part of Europe. We want to have a pro-Europe position.
Yeah.
And then it was allowed after the Soviet Union broke up.
Yeah.
It was allowed. But Ukraine is not allowed. Now, if anyone knows, there are three countries that have made their positions clear regarding the current world order. There's a one China policy. There is a no-go on Ukraine joining NATO or the EU.
Yeah.
And lastly, it's what the hell is going on with the United States?
Here's the thing. I think the whole Venezuela situation, if you look at it from the from both the political and the economic interest of the U.S. in their, you know, Monroe Doctrine piece of Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Is that for Venezuela alone, Venezuela has established a lot of both political and political and economic relations with both Russia and China.
Mm.
So that means that goes contrary to the Monroe Doctrine of no major powers establishing their presence in the Western Hemisphere.
Which targets China.
China is in that bucket. So it's two beds with one stone.
Yeah.
If you look at it, if the whole Venezuela, you know, more like a revamping thing to suit the American, to suit the American picture that they have in mind about what Venezuela should look like.
Yeah.
Not according to the Venezuelan, no, according to some think tank somewhere in Washington that recommended a bunch of policies to the White House, and then just happened to be the right guy is in power who doesn't, you know, read past the paragraph 3 of the policy, you just decide, you know what, let's go with it. So, that's why John Stewart was like, is this your first war? You are supposed to lie. Don't you just go oil. That's not how it's done. You're supposed to actually fabricate a believable excuse.
Mm.
Yeah. That will, that's different from the main agenda.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, when you look at Venezuela, it's more like two beds with one stone. First of all, remove Maduro out of office, and then privatize their oil industry after its nationalization from the, from the time of Hugo Chavez, and also China.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to revamp its military, its defense in infrastructure, Venezuela borrowed, I think, 2 point something billion to Russia. So now from Russia.
Mm.
But
the Chinese were apparently going to help with the construction.
The Chinese also, I think, invested, has a lot of, investment in Venezuela now. I don't know how this thing is going to work out, because you have to understand that, one of the reasons why a lot of, American private companies don't like Venezuela is because of the nationalization.
Mm.
And one such entity is, One such entity is an oil multinational corporation, ConocoPhillips.
Mm.
And on their website, they're pointing this out that, in the early 1990s, Venezuela created a new fiscal framework to induce foreign investment in its heavy oil projects in the Orinoco Belt and elsewhere.
Mm.
Relying on those terms, ConocoPhillips helped Venezuela develop the Petrozuata and Hamaca and Corococo. These are oil wells, two of them, offshore and one onshore, that ConocoPhillips invested in. After this significant investment, like Shell is doing here in Namibia, a change in regime happened, change in government happened, and then the whole thing gets nationalized.
Yeah.
Therefore, ConocoPhillips then, incurred investment losses because of the nationalization. So the whole thing goes, pardon me. Now, the whole thing goes to the, to the International Center for Settlement, of Investment Disputes, ICSID, and then, Venezuela, it settled in 2013, and Venezuela is asked to pay $8.7 billion in compensation. Now, for a country that's drowning in sanctions, it's kind of difficult to fork that amount of money.
Mm.
Now, these private companies, you know, or whatever companies that are coming out of China and the, you know, and Russia that are now in operating in Venezuela, if the whole thing is made, you know, solely pro, solely pro what, you know, solely pro America, are you sure it's just a I think it's safe to assume it's just a matter of time before Russia and China starts making their own plans of who is the right guy to put in office so that they can protect our interests? Because these things almost always, not almost always, it always boils down to private interest.
It always, which is primarily the issue with the oil.
Yeah.
Even though...
Monroe Doctrine. Hey.
Even though it's been said, supposedly the oil guys don't want to touch Venezuela because they know 10 years from now is the first time only that supposedly any benefits would be accrued.
It's a multi-billion dollar piece of infrastructure. Who would want to set it up in the middle of a war zone?
Or potentially be targets.
Yeah.
Or potentially be targets. Look, Helmut, that's just the thing. What Trump did was literally just made a whole bunch of people go like, oh, okay. This is how you try to deal with things if you don't like the people.
Exactly.
Look, the other concern is also there's a big sentiment of people who don't like, for example, the situation that happened in Nigeria with regarding the Islamist threat.
Christmas bombing.
Yeah, the bombing that happened the day after Christmas. When one of the major news outlets went on the ground there in Nigeria, they went to the Christian part of Nigeria, who said, and most of those, the, most of those Nigerians said after the kidnappings that took place in November,
yeah,
they don't trust their government to solve or to sort out the Islamist problem.
That's painful coming from your kids. If you're a father and you're being told that, Dad, I don't trust you to solve my problems, I'm going to ask someone else to do it for me.
Exactly.
Ouch.
And people also don't, much of those people that were asked would literally say, yes, please, if anyone can deal with the Islamist problem in Nigeria, they would say thank you.
The inaction brought desperation.
Yep. So there is another particular issue, obviously, that Africa faces. We face a major Islamist insurgency threat in Mali and Burkina Faso. In primarily in Mali, because it was very strong. They had you and I didn't even know this, that the Islamists had taken over the north of Mali here before 2020. The north of Mali was inaccessible, and they hosted an AFCON in Mali even. That is how bad it is. At one stage, one of those capitals was even blockaded by the Islamists, meaning the government was only in that city.
Mm-hmm.
The government was only in that city. So yeah.
Nah, you know what?
You need to go and leave. Yeah, and we see you back a week from now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, Africa equipped to be be independent security wise and economic wise and diplomatic wise?
I can tell you now, no.
That's a big no.
Yeah.
You know why? It's what you keep pointing out. The EU are both our development partners and African Union development partners. Nice. Now, when that very same development, when your development partners times two, is now having to, to channel all the resources that they'll be investing in you towards their own security, that leaves you going, what am I going to eat?
Mm.
Short answer, well, you're going to have to find, work out your own things too. Now,
yeah.
For those of you that, look, the thing is, I'm not being evil here. I'm just saying, well, for those of you that have been stealing money and then hiding it in some private institutions in, all over Europe, let me explain to you what happened to Nazi gold. After the war, when you'll go there and say, my money was in this bank, the Swiss will be like, what money?
Whose money?
Your money?
Look, I know that the money went to you. Which money? Who brought it here? We don't know.
these guys were maintaining a neutral stance on World War II, and everyone's like, here is our gold, here is our gold. After the war, they went there, like, so, can you have our gold? And like, what gold?
What gold, brah, are you talking about? Please, 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 please.
Yeah, please.
Don't implicate us.
I mean, stop play.
Yeah. Please stop those things. It doesn't work. So, yeah. On that note, guys.
All right. You all have a good weekend now. Again, World War III did not start. This is just a discussion so far.
Yeah.
But the tension in the geopolitical sphere is keeps rising by the minute. So.
Indeed. On that note, good evening, guys. Stay tuned and enjoy the rest of the programming. I'll see you on Sunday, as always.
On Sunday too. It's daily on Sunday.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.